It's been so long since we hijacked Sci-Fi Diner.
This is going to be an interesting evening.
Our last best hope for sci-fi.
Raul Wybera?
Oh, he's been around a lot.
It's in the script.
This is not the Dark Matter podcast.
Jim Arrowwood?
Well, there it is.
No boom today.
There's always boom tomorrow.
I might be able to help with that.
Hello there, Babylon 5 fans.
Season 5 is missing.
We know what people think.
This is Maggie Egan, your ISN news anchor.
I'm at a loss for words. J.P. Harvey.
You get this warm, fuzzy moment, you know?
Well, he's not playing Zapdos this time either. He's playing Zapdos.
I'm going to withhold comment.
The year is 2019. The place... The Babylon Project Podcast.
Hello there, fans. Welcome to the next thrill-packed episode of Raiders of the Lost Babylon 5.
Right.
Yep. This is the Babylon Project podcast, of course. And this is Raul Wybera, joined by my good friends Jim Arrowwood and J.P. Harvey. How are you guys?
Oh, just doing great.
Fantastic over here.
Yep. And we've got our wonderful producer, Troy Rudder, lurking in the background. So this is a little bit of a different episode. We kind of get off the station. We're off of Centauri Prime and not even Mimbari this time. We're definitely somewhere else. What episode are we talking about this time, Jim?
Well, today we're talking about The Ragged Edge, episode number 12 of season 5.
The Ragged Edge, interesting title. Kind of makes you wonder which is the Ragged Edge that we're talking about. Is it the Alliance, or is it the personal stories, or is it that this episode is going to be Byron free?
Byron free episode.
Yes, no more Byron rants for a while, folks.
Yeah. I don't know. It just seems to be a whole lot of things getting torn in this episode, leaving a ragged edge, I guess.
That certainly is a fair description.
Yeah.
Interpersonal tensions, suspicions, just lots of, it's edgy. Ragged,
yes.
Otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't we go ahead and get a baseline for this, Jim? Give us a summary so we know what we're talking about.
Coming right up.
Archive. Access. Initiated.
Members of the Alliance Council are boycotting all future meetings until they are confident that their shipping will not be attacked. During an attack on a human transport near Drazi Space, a lone survivor manages to make it to the Drazi homeworld in an escape pod. While investigating the wreckage, Rangers discover the missing escape pod and report back to Sheridan and Delenn. Garibaldi heads to the Drazi homeworld to meet a friend that knows about the whereabouts of the survivor. Garibaldi's friend is also a smuggler who owes money to the organization he works for, and they kill him, and then go after Garibaldi. Garibaldi is attacked by some people as he tries to escape and finds the survivor, who has been killed, and an item that, when he gets back to the station, is identified by Londo as belonging to the uniform of a Centauri Imperial Guard. Londo and Jakar return to Babylon 5. Along with Talon, Jakar enters his quarters and discovers the book he has been working on is missing. When he asks where it went, Talon explains that the Kari liberated the book so it wouldn't be lost. He further tells Jakar that there have been about 500,000 copies printed and that Jakar's book is outselling the Book of Jaquan. And he is now a religious icon. Garibaldi's drinking is starting to interfere with his job as he is sleeping through meetings, and his drunkenness may have led to the death of a critical witness in the attacks on Alliance shipping. Dr. Franklin informs Sheridan that he is leaving the station to take an important position in Earthdome. Well, there it is.
That was interesting in that it was a short summary description, but you really caught everything.
Yeah, there's a lot there.
There's a lot of screen time that it takes to give us that. What that summary pretty much captures completely.
Well, and you know, that part of that could be, there's a lot going on. So, you know, it's going to leave some rough edges, I guess. So, but we'll sort all that out as we go along.
Certainly.
Character files opened.
Well, who do we have on our guest cast today? We've actually got a real guest cast this time.
We do, and it's not as long as some of the more recent episodes have been. We have Marshall Teague returning as Talon. This will be his fifth of six appearances on the show, and we'll be seeing him again on one episode of Crusade later on. And John Castellanos as Tafik Azir, Mike's friend on the Drazi homeworld. This is his only appearance on Babylon 5. He doesn't really have any other genre credits. However, it would seem that he is probably most known for 231 episodes of The Young and the Restless.
Which is odd, because he kind of reminds me of Oded Fehr, the guy who plays Ardeth Bay in The Mummy.
Okay. I'm not even going to try to follow that. All right.
we'll actually get to that.
Okay. Miron E. Willis plays Brannigan. He's the Red Star 9 pilot that is unfortunately brought down and dispatched on the Drazi homeworld. This is his only appearance on the show. He's also been in Star Trek Next Generation, Star Trek Voyager, and appeared in Independence Day in 1996. And under featuring, we have Mark Hendrickson as the Narn Acolyte, who unfortunately gets his face smashed. This is his 17th of 18. 17th.
Somebody has to get their face smashed. It might as well be.
Yeah.
There's a boom.
17th of 18 appearances on the show, and he will return again after he heals in two episodes of Crusade.
Okay.
And that's our guest cast.
Oh gosh. Yeah, you'll get the Mummy reference in a bit. Books, Egypt, it's either referencing the Mummy or referencing Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah. Books, mummies, and face smashing, so.
Yep.
Initiating plot analysis.
So, we don't start our episode in the middle of Egypt. We actually started in Sheridan's office, where it seems he doesn't like paperwork.
Yeah. Well, he's certainly immersed in it, though. It looks like it's a never-ending task. Yeah.
And Delenn's trying to get some information from him. He just says, go stall him. And Delenn's response was, great. Fine, I'll tell them we're declaring war on Earth.
Yeah. And he's, okay, fine. And then the look on his face when he realized what she actually said. And then,
after she left the room.
Yeah. And then when he realized that she was just kidding around. It was pretty good.
Yep. So he's shuffling papers. His arms are loaded down. You know, he's president of the galaxy. Doesn't he have aides to do that kind of lugging around?
Yeah, one would think. But, you know, he does his own thing.
Yep. Unfortunately, he does all of that work for nothing, because that council is boycotting.
Yeah.
They are not going to come back until Sheridan does something about the attacks on the shipping lanes.
Yes. You know, it seems to me that the Alliance members are just about in favor of doing anything as long as somebody comes in and does it for them.
Yeah, it's like, you know, where is their contribution to the defense? I mean, you know, one of the criticisms of NATO is that the U.S. funds most of it. In comparison, NATO does more than what this alliance is doing.
Then Dylan or somebody brought up the attacks are happening outside of, at least I thought it was implied, outside of where each individual planet or nation is authorized to use force. So they're kind of becoming victims of the collective they. The whole thing has become a victim of its rules that presumed peace.
You know,
it sounds like the League of Nations or something where, well, you can defend yourself. You've got that sovereign right. If you get into somebody else's business, that can be construed as an attack. And she goes, yeah, but these attacks are in the space between. And it's almost as if the council members are saying, hey, Alliance, that's your job. You're the one that's supposed to keep that in-between space outside of our sovereign territories protected. We fly out into that space and we're getting attacked. So until you fix it, we're out.
And, you know, you might be on the right track, or they may even be taking more of a U.S. historical model. Fine, you've got troops, you've got your own militias, you can patrol your own waters. But if I remember correctly, doesn't the Constitution restrict naval forces on the high seas to the federal government?
I'm not sure.
I thought it was strictly the purview of the federal government to raise navies for the high seas.
Right. I think that's right.
So, yeah, you've probably got a point there, JP.
Now, there's not enough room in the time for storytelling, but I would suspect that if this was the real world, they would have council meetings to discuss how they maybe want member planets to contribute to that neutral space.
Yeah, at least financially.
Right, we're having a problem with the White Star Fleet alone policing this particular problem. Let's put together some sort of a task force or something of member nations with full disclosure, so nobody's doing anything sneaky. We can go out there and collectively patrol what is currently kind of neutral ground. But that would be a whole nother story.
Mm-hmm.
And
like a naval exercise.
I think they needed this little dispute in here to move along the rest of the stories that, and there are a lot of them, you know,
yeah.
As Jim's awesome summary showed us, there's a lot going on. They don't have time to use this particular nugget as a separate storyline.
Mm-hmm.
But and it's going to shake itself out here in this episode. We're going to figure it out. So.
Yep. In fact, we start down that path on the very next scene. We've got a cargo transport. It looks like one of the Earth transports being flanked by some of the smaller Drazi warships. Basically getting their butts pummeled.
Yeah.
And one guy survives the attack, which is something I suspect a whole lot of people, particularly Centauri, don't want to have happen. So at least he's surviving for now.
Yeah.
We'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah. Well, you know, we know that he at least makes it a landing on
correct
the Drazi homeworld.
Correct. And we're almost at the point of getting all of our pieces in place. We've got Londo, and this is a first. He's actually happy to be back on Babylon 5.
Can you blame him?
No, I can't blame him in this particular case. But speaking of happy, everyone seems real happy to see Jakar.
Yeah, and Londo's kind of at a loss about that. But
Jakar brushes it off like he notices it, but then it's almost like if I react to these people, someone's going to point at the camera and say, you know, you got punked or something.
Yeah.
So he just kind of dismisses all of this attention that's he's being mm-hmm. given as he continues to walk and talk with Londo.
Though Londo certainly doesn't brush it off. He uses this as an opportunity.
An opportunity for Jakar to fundraise.
Yes. Go ahead and let's hear an example of that.
I'm honored, sir. He seems very glad to see you.
Yes, but we weren't gone that long, less than a month.
Well, there you have the key to your popularity, your absence. Go away for a month and they bow. Go away for 6 months, they will tear the place apart when you come back. Perhaps you should go away and never come back again. Then your popularity would be so overwhelming, it would blacken the stars.
Olave.
I have always said this about you. Nothing so improves your company like the lack of it. The less they see of you, the more they like you. No, no, wait. Perhaps you can make some money from this. 10 credits for you not to be there for an hour. 100 credits for you not to be there for the day, and for you not to be there for the rest of your life. Well, they could never afford it.
Now, you only got the second half of their conversation there. In the first half, the shoe was entirely on the other foot when Jakar was giving him grief about his place is not meant to be happy. And that Jakar's main task in life is to watch out for Londo's spiritual well-being.
Yeah, that's a 24/7 job.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like we've got a real odd couple style friendship here. It's just who's Oscar and who's Felix.
Yeah, really.
Ah, gosh. And the last piece of the setup, Mike, as you said in the description or in the summary, is hungover and making excuses and pretty much completely just skipped the stage of regretting being drunk.
No, it's more like he hasn't gotten to that stage yet, the stage of regret. He just wants to stay mm-hmm. numb. He just wants to stay numb because, you know,
yeah.
he's been through a lot. And especially when you consider the telepath stuff that he's dealt with, you know.
And Bester quite literally rubbing his face in it.
Yeah, it's pure escapism is what it is. But it's nonetheless, it's very sad to see.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's going to be interesting watching how that gets resolved as the season comes through.
Mm-hmm.
We see a hint of the regret, too, later when he makes reference to, was it a ball peen hammer or a claw hammer?
Mm-hmm.
And it just comes out. He makes a statement about somebody pummeling him with one or some such thing. And then the story moves on. But you see hints that he's very aware, or that hint, he's very aware that he's kind of fallen into this mm-hmm. ugly hole.
Yeah.
But he's not in control of that.
Nope.
No, he's not.
Delenn has found out about that survivor. We also find out why there was an Earth transport being guarded by Drazi. They were unofficially smuggling for the Drazi. Get a forbidden items, a contraband list, and sure enough, there's going to be a black market.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, in this case, it almost sounds like it's getting unofficial government support. So they're not going to get any help from the Drazi. Mike is going to take care of it. He's got contacts, and he insists actually on running it solo.
Yeah, Sheridan wanted to send Franklin with him, and Mike says, no, I'm not gonna, I have to do this alone. And Franklin, he was pretty put out by that.
The thing is, this is pretty standard Mike. Under normal conditions, I could see why he would want, you know, it would make sense. Okay, with the contacts, make it a solo. The second thing I've got to ask is, why send Franklin? The guy's a doctor right now doing clinical research on varying species. What part of this mission would need a doctor?
Good question. I think I'll just turn that over for JP's standard explanation.
It's in the script.
It's in the script.
Why? Why is this happening?
Yeah.
Well, it does give Franklin cause to be concerned with Mike, at least. So,
yeah,
it's in the script. Probably sums it up. We find out our third most, depending on you ask, second or third most favorite. Narn has survived.
Yes.
Talon is back, yep. And for some reason, maybe it's because he knows better, Jakar is suspicious. It's like the first thing out of his mouth is, okay, so why are you really here?
Well, yeah. Well, not only that, here is Jakar being greeted by everybody, and, everybody is treating him very, very well. And that would...
Talon is playing the part of warrior philosopher.
Yeah, and that would cause anybody to be a little suspicious, I would imagine.
Marshall Teague does something that is incredibly difficult. He, I don't want to say steals the scene, but he does about as close to that as you can to Andreas Ketzelius, and that is something hard to do. This is a case where I really, really wish we were doing a video podcast because, so much of this is just in the facial expressions. But Jim, if you've got that ready for us, play it.
Okay.
Where is my book, Talon? The book I have been writing for the last 2 years?
That's what I wanted to see you about. You must understand, Jakar, that all we knew is that you went with Mallari to Centauri Prime. Many of us felt that you had been taken prisoner or were going to be executed.
Where is my book? It is my only copy.
Yes, that is precisely the point. The Kari felt if anything happened to you, the Book of Jakar would never see the light of day. So we liberated it.
Liberated it?
We took it home. Those that read it were very moved by it. And they made some copies.
Copies?
Just a few. Well, they're friends. Made a few more copies.
How many?
Well, it's hard to say exactly. There was some confusion when it went to the printers.
Printers? I've only been gone for a month, Talon. There can't be that many copies floating around this quickly. How many?
500,000 or 600,000.
What?
I have been told that it will outsell the Book of Jaquam. Congratulations, Citizen Jakar. You are now a religious icon.
Just 500,000 or 600,000.
Thousand.
Yeah.
And now you're a religious icon. What a condemnation.
This is one of my favorite pieces of dialogue in the whole dang series there.
The look on his face is like the kid that's took a cookie and got caught. And the mom knows that he didn't just take one. He's like, how many did you eat? How many have you taken?
Yeah.
Oh, just a couple dozen. What?
It's the first time we see Talon looking nervous and acting nervous. I mean,
and he's the one with the sword.
He's pretty sure of himself most of the time, but right now it's like, I don't know how deep into this we want to get.
Well, look how much Jakar is packing into one word responses. I'd be getting afraid for my life at that point too.
Printers.
Oh gosh. Well, Mike is leaving. We're gonna have more of the Talon Jakar interactions as this goes through. Seriously, this whole episode it's on par with the best Jakar Londo dialogues that we see through the series, in my opinion. But in the meantime, Mike is leaving and Franklin is upset. It's like, you know, like I had said earlier, Mike's making the right calls and presumably for the right reasons, but Franklin is still sensing that there's something up, some sort of wall up between them now.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of a turnabout flashback scene from where just before Franklin went on his walkabout, that Mike knew that something was going on with Franklin.
With the drug abuse.
Right. And yeah. So now Franklin is sensing something going on. You know, I don't know, maybe a symbiosis between two addicts?
I don't know, but in all the years I've been watching the show, that had never clicked with me.
Yeah.
That is an excellent catch, Jim.
Oh, thanks.
Otherwise, you have to ask the question, why would Franklin go? I mean, I get Sheridan basically wants a second set of eyes, you know, two guys watching out for each other better than one. Mike makes it real clear that's not practical. You'll sit in the hotel while I talk to the source, who isn't going to entertain having you in the room.
Right.
Seems reasonable. Well, yeah, Franklin is onto something else here, and it's not about the mission or how come I never get to go on the fun missions. He knows there's a problem with his friend.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And I didn't get the impression Sheridan realizes that and picked Franklin to be the one to go. He just picked Franklin to be the one to go, like they had traveled before to Mars, right?
Right. Well, with Marcus.
Or to, yeah. So, but Franklin wants to go because his friend's in distress. I don't think he understands what's wrong. He just knows there's an issue.
Yeah. You know what? That's right. Garibaldi, Franklin, and Lita had a mission to get together too.
Yeah, to Mars, right? Wasn't it to go meet with Number One?
Yeah, they went down there. That's when Lita mm-hmm. became yeah. very indignant about gulping the gulping the water out of the canteen.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to get sued.
Uh-huh. All right. And where a little diplomacy is needed, doctors are almost by definition not there to shoot you.
Yeah.
So that can provide, and there's some history there with Franklin being an envoy.
I think, though, we're actually just kind of picking at nits here.
Probably.
Making something more out of it. You know, Franklin has shown he can take care of himself. He was handy, and Sheridan just wanted to send somebody along to watch Garibaldi's back, and Franklin can do that. He'd be very capable.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, religious icons, shall we say Londo is enjoying Jakar's status?
especially yep. since he knows that Jakar does not want that status.
Yeah. Actually, he's one of the few people who probably understands just how much Jakar's went to avoid it.
Yeah, up to and including becoming Londo's bodyguard.
Right. Hey, but Londo gets a mention in the book.
Yeah.
am I in the book? Well, not by name, but...
Prideful wind catcher.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Should we juxtapose it? Full of crap?
Pompous bag of air.
Which is...
that. Yeah.
Which actually is rather kind, considering what Londo has done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Though it does show that Jakar gets Londo. Well, we switch... You know, the graphics have been improving a bit, in season 5. They blew their budget, I think, on this. That is an interesting landing sequence.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. Looks like the Drazi homeworld is a really busy place.
Mm-hmm.
Smugglers coming and going, and
lots of trade.
Yeah, lots of smugglers coming and going.
I don't think the guy sitting next to Garibaldi was a smuggler, though.
No, but I'll bet one of those ships is bringing in a few dozen cases of afterburn whiskey, though.
Oh gosh. Yeah, so we get our first look at the Drazi homeworld.
Yeah, and we find out that Mike is a bad tipper.
Oh, God, yeah. Though, with that kind of cramped room, sponge-painted walls, big outdoor balcony, though.
Yeah, that was a neat view.
Mm-hmm. And it does kind of remind you of being in the Middle East or being in Egypt.
Mm-hmm. And the music in the background doesn't hurt that atmosphere at all.
No. And, you know, actually, even his contact, a guy named Tafik, kind of rings of Cairo in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, it really has that Indiana Jones / The Mummy sort of feel.
Yes.
But Mike has been in contact with Tafik, and the pilot's in hiding, and it sounds like pretty much everyone wants him dead.
Yes.
We don't know who everyone is.
Not yet.
But he's hiding.
He was flying an Earth ship,
mm-hmm.
Smuggling for the Drazi, so you would expect the Drazi might be the ones that actually want to get a hold of this guy.
Yeah, to get hold of him, we're talking about silent. Well, they're wanting to do that too. We do find out a lot about Drazi culture, though. This, other than green and purple.
Mm-hmm.
I like the concept there. Narrow streets is the defense. The reason behind the cramped room and the large balconies. I've actually stayed in Turkey before, and the rooms are kind of cramped, but what tradition? I won't sing it.
Thank you.
But you, oh gosh, but you've got the clip. It is an interesting background.
Yeah.
Go ahead and play that for us, sir.
So, what do you think of my city?
Well, I think it's hot, crowded, it's noisy, and it's old.
Thank you.
And what's with the streets? They're narrow, you can hardly get by.
Tradition goes back centuries. To prevent invaders from taking their city, they built their streets too narrow for armies or engines of war. When you have to go through two or three at a time, you are most vulnerable.
See, now you can fly over and drop these things called bombs. What's the point?
What's the point of any tradition? Look around. The Drazi were originally an outdoor race. They came indoors only when necessary, so their rooms were small, the balconies large. Now they live indoors like the rest of us, but the architecture remains. Your shirt buttons from the left, but a woman's blouse buttons from the right, because servants used to dress them. The servants are gone, but the style remains.
Yeah, traditions. Very, very interesting piece there. So, and I think almost in a continuation of traditions, Tafik brings some form of alcohol, which, with what we know of Mike already, bad move.
Yeah.
Though, having, like I said, been to Turkey, at least with the secular, it certainly seems that type of have a drink. I've, shall we say, made the mistake of drinking with a Turk. They have a beverage called Raki, R-A-Q-I. It's an anisette, so it's a licorice. And you take your shot, you dump it into a taller, much narrower glass of water and ice, and it turns milky white. And then you drink it. And this stuff has a kick. It actually scored points with me because he made the comment that you're the only American who's ever been able to keep up with me. It's like, okay, that's a dubious, I think that's a dubious honor, but
yeah.
It was him explaining the city and showing the best of his hospitality, and
he doesn't know that Mike mm-hmm. has this affliction, and
yep.
because apparently they had been together on Io or something, and Mike was drinking at the time, so this is just a natural thing.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, yeah, we had the what was the gal? Uncle Mike. Wasn't Eyes.
No.
But that was back on Io, I thought, wasn't it? Or was that Mars?
No, that was Mars.
That was Mars.
Yeah.
But it's that time period where, yeah, Michael is definitely had been hitting the bottle.
Yeah, and you know a lot has changed because and these two guys haven't seen each other for a very long time because Tafik mm-hmm. is confused, what happened to your hair?
That is a joke we hadn't heard for a while.
Yes.
that was season 3, where I guess was the last time we heard a hair joke with Mike.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Mm-hmm. When Susan was recruiting smugglers, in fact, actually more smugglers, you know, we get just a real quick interruption with an important Earth Dome message for Franklin.
Yeah. It can't even wait for him to have dinner.
No, we are quickly back to the Drazi homeworld where, as expected, Mike is out cold and Tafik is shot.
And that doesn't just mean that he's just drunk. He is literally shot.
Yeah, he steps out of the room to make arrangements and is attacked. Now, here's a question. Would a sober Mike have actually made a difference in any of this? Because he does wake up in time. Well, he wakes up in time to get the crap beat out of him by a Drazi.
Yeah. If Mike, I think that's really a no-brainer. Yes, Mike would have known something was up a lot sooner than he did. And he might have been able to avoid some of this, but no, he was incapacitated.
Mm-hmm. At the very least, he could have handled the fight a little bit better.
Oh, perhaps. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, the drink and the heat, he couldn't keep up. Did you notice the set, the rail on the balcony flopping back and forth?
The shaking, yeah.
And the bed, too, when that fight starts, the Drazi punches or shoves Mike down on the bed, and the corner of the bed Mike lands on collapses. It's like, what was that up on?
Hey.
Stack of books or something. It just went right over
IKEA.
Like there was bad day for the prop guys, I guess.
IKEA furniture. What do you expect? But well, that's not the only attack happening. Because the pilot is shortly attacked by cloaked guys, and somewhat more sobered Mike gets another pummeling.
Yeah, he's getting his butt kicked all over the place here.
Fighting with a hangover.
Mm-hmm. This one does not seem to be Drazi. We don't know who because they're cloaked, but yeah, he's having a bad go of it. Even without the alcohol, he's having a bad go of it.
Mm-hmm.
So Delenn gets an emergency call and everything's gone south and he needs an extraction.
And detox.
Yes, yes.
This is where he makes the claw hammer statement, too.
Mm-hmm.
This is where he makes that statement about needing a claw hammer and someone to beat him in the head multiple times or something. It's that I think he realizes as he woke out of a drunken stupor and then gets beat up twice within some small number of minutes that that was a little acknowledgement in my mind that he knows he's in trouble.
Definitely a guilty look on his face.
He does have enough presence of mind to reach down and pick up an item off the ground.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which is going to turn out to be somewhat important. On the flip side, Jakar seems to have collected a congregation.
Wait, like Byron? I had to do it. I'm sorry.
Actually, quite a bit the opposite, shall we say?
Well, look, yes. Guys, you gotta remember though. At least there's no hymn singing.
Yeah, thank God for that. You guys are just going to do
hugs
this to
and
me,
hair
huh?
touching.
We've heard Jakar sing before. We don't want to hear that again.
Oh gosh! You know, Talon has this thing about drawing his sword, and I'm sorry. I've had enough gashes in my hands in the past. Why does he have to draw a sword when his back to traditions requires it to be blooded? That just freaking hurts to watch. It's a sympathy cringe.
It's a punctuation is what it is.
At least he was respectful to the weapon. He didn't toss it on the table. He set it down very gently.
Yeah, he treats the weapon with appropriate respect, but that hurts to watch.
Yeah, it does. He does it an awful lot. It's a wonder he hasn't had to have his hand amputated or something.
Yeah.
Or he doesn't amputate it himself, one or the other.
The price of gloves, if nothing else, has got to be. But he's got a good point in it. His point in making it was the sword versus the tongue, kind of throwing Jakar's words from a couple episodes right back at him.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when Jakar went to Centauri Prime?
Yeah. Jakar has been unwillingly appointed a spiritual leader, and Jakar doesn't know if he is capable of taking on this role that's being thrust upon him. Now, throughout history, we found leadership placed on people that were reluctant to take it on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he doesn't have to worry because Talon has his back. And
he's got friends like Talon.
Yeah, I just kind of threw this in.
All my life, I have been responsible only for myself. When I risked alone to avoid making others pay the price for my mistakes. They want me to show them another way. What if I show them the wrong way? What if they come to me not because of the lesson, but because of the teacher? I worry, Talon, that my shadow may become greater than the message.
If that happens, I give you my word that I will personally kill you.
This is supposed to put my mind at ease.
I'm a warrior. It's what I have to give. You and I both have our burdens to bear, Jakar. I will carry mine. If you will carry yours.
So, you know, Jakar is thinking about this, and it's really neat the way he's thinking. Is like, hey, mm-hmm. You know, I the message is what's important, not the person delivering it, number one. Number two, what if I take the wrong turn and take a bunch of people with me? He just is not willing to take on that responsibility.
Yeah, especially, you know, when the role is to teach people to rise above hatred.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's why you've got someone like Talon on your back, behind you.
Yeah.
Ready to stick a sword through him if he steers wrong.
Yeah.
So Mike is back with only a button to show for the effort.
A button and a beating.
Well, yeah, and a beating. Don't know who the attackers were, but interesting point is brought up. How did they know Mike was there and the whole meeting was going down? So it sounds like they might have a leak.
Perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And hardly a moment goes by there that Londo waltzes in, recognizes the button as one from the Imperial Palace Guards. They end that meeting pretty darn fast.
Yeah. So I guess we're supposed to be led to think that those were Centauri guys that were wearing the outfits.
Yeah, sure sounds like it.
I had to suspend some disbelief here because I thought it was strange that secret fleet movements, things going on behind the scenes on Centauri Prime, and they dispatch some palace guards in a discreet manner, enough that they've got to conceal who they are by cloaks and things like that, and yet they're wearing their official uniform.
Yes, exactly.
Underneath the cloak.
Precisely.
And, so this was for me another one of those, well, because it's in the script and they got to move the story along, but it's like that was totally unbelievable that they would be in their formal regalia, I guess, underneath the cloaks.
Yeah.
It's like, stop. They would have put on jeans and a sweater or something. You know,
you're undercover. Get out there and take care of this and make sure
black.
You're wearing your make sure you're wearing your Class A uniform while you're doing it.
So, but it did move the story along, and I thought Mike was pretty agile when Londo goes, "Where did you get that?" Was a trinket that some guy sold me, said it was old, and that, you know, he didn't miss a beat by making sure that Londo, he too apparently wants to keep Londo out of the whole discussion until they sort out if he's the threat or not.
Yeah, so now they can't trust Londo, but at least they don't think it's an intentional leak,
right?
And in fact, they discuss using Londo as a potential information source, and we get a surprising no, don't do this. And it's not just the surprising part that it was a no, but it's who says no and why.
Yeah.
And it's really the why he says no. Go ahead and play that one.
No, there's something here that we're missing.
All right, so what are we going to do about it? We're going to tell Londo what's going on and have him find out for us, or do we keep him completely out of the equation?
Tell him nothing. If you tell him what we know, he'll be outraged. He'll do whatever's necessary to track this problem back to its source, and in a very shortly thereafter, he will almost certainly be dead.
Why do you say that?
We were attacked on Centauri Prime by other Centauri opposed to Molari. At the last moment, he was saved by an outside force. One that seemed to have the run of the palace. This tells me that there are two different forces at work in the royal palace. So if the Centauri really are behind these attacks, one of these two factions is involved. Molari is alive only because someone back home wants him that way. If he should begin asking the wrong questions, they would kill him in an instant. No, until we know which side is involved, it's best to keep Londo out of this.
I agree. From here on out, we tell Londo only what he needs to know, and that's all.
When is he due to return to Centauri Prime?
4 to 6 weeks, depending on the health of the regent.
And you go with him?
Where he goes, I go.
Good. Keep an eye on him, Jakar. He may be our only chance to solve this thing, but I'd rather not do it at the cost of his life.
An eye is all I have these days.
Yeah, it's Jakar's reasons don't sound like they're just strictly tactical or strategic. There's definitely a, in my opinion at least, a personal element to that.
Well, there's also a political element because
Well, that's the tactical strategic, but go ahead.
Well, Londo is a known quantity, okay? Mm-hmm. And he is going to step up and be emperor. And they know Londo. They know how he's going to behave. They know what to expect from him. And they want him in that position, especially if there's another faction that is against Londo, knowing that it would probably start a lot of trouble, right?
Right.
Okay. That now we know that later on that Londo being a known quantity doesn't mean anything, because the faction that is on Centauri Prime is the Drak. It's not other mm-hmm. than Centauri, and nobody knows this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So
yeah, and we've already been hinted at that Londo's days of freedom are numbered.
Yeah. Oh, there was no hint about it. You know, that's.
Yeah, the region made it perfectly clear.
Yeah. So you know, we've got some interesting things going on. Yeah, there's leaks in there. It's Londo reporting home like he's supposed to. In his mm-hmm. capacity as ambassador, and the leak is not on Babylon 5. The leak is on Centauri Prime.
Yep. And did you notice the kind of full circle part of Jakar's comment as far as keeping an eye on him?
Yeah, all I have is an eye.
Mm-hmm. Not just that, but also back to what Talon had told him earlier, a sword is all he has to give.
Mm-hmm.
An eye is all Jakar has to give.
Yeah. So we got some interesting dynamics coming about mm-hmm. through this, and it all boils down to that the Centauri are not in control of themselves. There's an outside force there.
Yep. Indeed. So we get another short interlude with Franklin. He's leaving. That's the gist of that priority call.
Yeah. He has a new job.
Mm-hmm. And it just was a hard decision. And then we jump over to Jakar, who has a new job too, it seems. He's now teaching complete with object lessons.
Yep. Well, his self-doubt didn't last very long, did it?
No, and you know how he was worried about the person overshadowing the message of the book? I don't know. Do you think that's going to be a problem?
Not this early in the life of the religious caste or whatever this. Oh my gosh. They're arguing with the author over what he meant.
Yeah. Now, this is another case where I really wish we were a video podcast or a vodcast. The look on Talon's face as he's sitting behind Jakar. The intentional deadpan look.
And he's just back there doing his job, and as he promised, you know, you screw up and I'm gonna fix you. But you know, and this guy that's arguing, he says, you know, if this book is inspired by the universe, you know, then in other words, Jakar is not the object in this guy's mind. It's the message that's important that came through Jakar. Somebody had to write it down.
Well, and, you know, Jakar likes to revise a lot, so.
Yes, he does.
Oh.
Well, it sounds
this
like.
This is priceless.
Sounds like he does need a revision, though, then.
Why don't we let the listeners decide?
The Book of Jakar is holy. If it was written under the direct inspiration of the universe itself, as everyone believes it to be, then the whole of it must be true. How then can you go against it?
Show me the passage in the book. Good. Good. Now, put your face in the book. If the book is holy and I am holy, then I must help you become closer to the thoughts of the universe. put your face in the book. The first thing we are all taught is that while outsiders cannot be trusted, we can always trust a fellow Norn, yes? This is your point, is it not? Good. Then put your face in the book.
There's lesson number one.
And we get some boom.
Yeah, we get some boom today. Like I said, it's almost like Marshall Teague just steals that whole scene with just that one line.
Uh-huh.
There's lesson number one.
Yep, you get some wisdom right there.
And you've, like I said, he's got that suppressed smirk in the background that he's able to get through all the prosthetics. It's just awesome to watch. It's a great watch.
Yeah, and you know what's going to happen. You know, uh-huh. As soon as Jakar says, put your face in the book, it's like, oh, geez, here we go.
Yep.
We know what's going to happen. And sure enough.
Sure enough. Well, Talon knows what's going to happen, too. That's it's like we're in on the joke.
Yes.
Okay. So now this is the first part of the wrap up. Jakar coming to terms. The next part is Franklin, as you say, has a new job. He is the first leaving. So I guess you can call it the beginning of the end, or maybe the end of the beginning.
Well, I'm not sure what month we are in as far as the show is concerned, but Franklin also indicates that it's still going to be a while.
Yeah. Since each season kind of runs a year of the station's history, we're halfway through, you know, figure he's still got about a half a year to go.
Okay, June or July. Okay.
So either way, Sheridan is not happy as president, but seems to be personally.
Yeah. You know, I can understand this feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But
though the flip side is, as president, this really does advance the work that Franklin's been assigned, that, you know, he's been tasked with doing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, he's not quitting his current job, it sounds like. He's going to be able to do it better.
Yeah.
He's just not going to be on B5 or eventually, you know, the permanent side of the Alliance. He's going to go back to Earth.
So really it's more of the unhappiness at losing a friend.
Right.
Or at least losing continuous access to said friend.
Yeah.
You know, part of his disturbance is a little misplaced because they're getting things ready on Minbari Prime. And Sheridan and Delenn are going to be leaving sometime in the next 6 months as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's just Franklin's leaving first.
Yeah.
I wouldn't expect Franklin to move to Minbar with what he's supposed to be doing, because he's going to need access to the resources of Babylon 5 at a minimum. And Minbar isn't going to have that.
Mm.
So he's...
But Franklin, he wants to make sure that he tells everybody that he's leaving himself.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's got to call in to Mike.
Yep. Who's not answering.
Yeah. And the camera pans over to an empty bottle of Afterburn whiskey.
Ugh.
You would
that
think
sounds
as,
nasty.
You would think as security guard of the galaxy... Or security chief of the galaxy, he'd be able to afford better.
Except he's not worrying. He's not after it for a good sipping bourbon. He's trying to keep it low.
It's quantity, not quality.
Yeah. So jet fuel is going to do the job with for a lot less money.
Uh-huh.
And that is where the excitement for this episode ends.
Mm-hmm.
And wow. That is the end of episode 12. So we're definitely swinging into the home stretch, and you can kind of tell that with the tone. It's taking a little more of a galactic perspective now. It's sort of shifting outward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, closing thoughts, anyone? Or closing thoughts, everyone?
Well, ragged edges. We Mike is definitely ragged.
Yep. And it seems the Alliance might be as well.
Yeah, there's some pieces there that need to be put back together.
And Sheridan's inner circle is starting to fray on top of it. You know, not just with Mike, but
yeah. It's not self-destructing, but it is
right.
It's coming to its end. You know, as I mentioned earlier, it seemed like this group of people were brought together for a particular purpose, and now the purpose has been served, and we're going to start going our separate ways.
One of the sadder consequences of success sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I've been through that a couple of times. I'm sure both of you have as well.
Mm-hmm.
JP, thoughts?
No. Not really. We just need to let the story unfold. Mm-hmm. And you pointed out we're at a pivot point. That's not what you said, but I mean, we're at a turning point. It's not just because we're, you know, in the second half of the last season. There now are some really big things that are going to happen.
Yeah, it's gone from just the station to Earth to the Shadow War. Well, that I guess that kind of goes with the just, you know, the station focus, but station focus, Earth focus, galactic focus.
Yeah. And we're looking forward to, and we're going to get what is, I think, effectively a wrap up of the Psi-Corps and that piece of the storyline as it is contained in the five seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to turn a whole lot of attention to what's happening on Centauri.
Yep.
And, you know, that's things. I don't want to say things are coming to a head, because that sounds like it characterizes it wrong in my mind, but we're getting to the very deliberate and real conclusion of the story that JMS was telling. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's not just going to fade out. There's a point to all of this building that's gone on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even with its little wrinkles and blemishes and stuff, like we talked about, some clunky things, and it's in the script, not just in this episode, but he's taking us somewhere here, and we're about to see across the last, you know, handful or, you know, so episodes, we're about to see where all this is leading.
We're being shown the context of the things we were shown in season one.
Yep.
So, you know, we know where the story was going to end. It's the journey and how and why. And yeah, you're right. It's amazing the way he had this plan from the start. I keep hoping someone else would do it, but as far as I can see, it's still pretty much unique, not just in science fiction television, but in pretty much television in general.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that just leaves one question, folks.
No.
Was there any boom today?
No.
Okay, two questions.
Not the question. That's the second question. The first question is, what are we going to look at next time? And
Babylon 5.
For me, it's going to be one of my favorite episodes, that we get a real clear picture of Bester, where he takes a couple... He is mentoring a couple of trainee psychops, and they go in pursuit of a murderous rogue telepath, and they wind up on Babylon 5, and this gets kind of gruesome.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a light episode, and you go along, and Bester just
we
seems
We see
like
the real Bester here, though.
Well, we get a picture of Bester as being more or less just a nice guy.
Yeah. Like I said, we really see the true Bester in this next episode.
Yeah. So I'm not gonna say what I was originally gonna say to follow, because that would be just absolutely giving it all away.
So yeah.
At any rate, yep. The core is mother, the core is father is the next episode up.
And is this our last Bester episode?
I believe it is.
Ah. Well, the character is striding, not leaving, but striding out of the main series then, really in true style. And like I said, we truly see this. That's the time to see the entirety of Bester's character.
Yes, it is, in fact, the last episode that we see Mr. Bester.
Mm-hmm. I will say this. We do, one of the things we do learn is his thoughts and opinions that he's been giving us, the altruism that he's presenting is real.
Mm-hmm.
From a certain point of view.
Yeah. Well, let's stop dancing around.
Yep.
And
all right.
Get this wrapped up. So
all right.
Now back to your question.
Was there any boom today? Metaphysical boom counts.
Hey, we had freighter boom at the beginning and book boom at
book
the
boom.
End.
Book boom.
Book boom. Boom boom. What about tomorrow?
I don't know. Maybe we'll get a cold slap in the face, but I'm sure there'll be some interesting boom tomorrow. What do you think, JP?
I think there's always boom tomorrow.
Well, then there it is. You
always.
Can't avoid it.
Mm-hmm. Good night, everyone.
Say good night, JP.
Good night, JP.
So long, everybody.
Podcast terminated.
Thank you for listening to the Babylon Project podcast. You can email Raul and Jim at thebabylonprojectpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Babylon Project Podcast. On the internet, we are at babylonprojectpodcast.wordpress.com. To subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed on the webpage.